Welcome to The Dojo, the podcast where we turn marketing stories into marketing tasks that you can do today to increase your traffic, your ranking, your leads, your sales, and get you more people into your business and turn into revenue. This week, we're going to be joined from Lauren. Lauren, actually, be great if you could just tell the ninjas a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind.
Okay. I'm Lauren, and I work in SEO and content. I accidentally fell into it a couple of years back when I decided that actually I wasn't, during COVID, I wasn't going back into retail after maternity. I was going to go and write because that's what I always wanted to do. And someone must have taken pity on me somewhere along the line. And I got employed into a private blood testing company to turn medical jargon into something that everyone could understand. And then by that, I accidentally fell into the world of SEO and I've stayed there. and now I work for fabulous Octopus EV. So as their like content and SEO. So that's very exciting. So that's pretty much
awesome.
What I do.
That makes three of us, I believe, that has fallen from retail into a lovely career in SEO content and digital marketing, which is awesome. And on that subject of medical stuff, we're going to go in a completely different direction and ask the three of you to tell me your headlines for this week. So Jess, what's your headline for this week?
My headline is very simple. TikTok USA ban.
Tim, what's your headline for this week?
Mine is the talks between Apple and Google about Google Gemini powering AI features in Apple's operating systems.
Oh my God. And Lauren, what's your headline for this week?
Pretty much the growing trend in really relaxed tone of voices. So like the likes of Audi, Monzo, plant-based, if you've heard of them. So. And us, well, Octopus EV as well, like Octopus in general. Can't forget that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I love talking about tone of voice, but I can't help but navigate directly to that SEO stuff. Tim, tell us more about Gemini and Apple working together.
Okay. So this is a report from Bloomberg from Mark Gurman, who is a perennial sharer of Apple insider information. Who has reported that Apple and Google have been in conversation about potentially baking in Google Gemini into Apple's operating system to allow it to do what? We don't know exactly, but people are suspecting power a better version of Siri, which for any of us who use Apple, that would be pretty much welcome. But I think this is massive news. It's massive for a number of reasons. Firstly, because it probably implies that Apple aren't doing so well with their own attempts at building out a large language model. But it would also give Google close to 100% share of the on-device assistant market. They had a deal with Samsung where Gemini is powering some AI features on Samsung phones. And obviously it can power Google Assistant, which is on all the Android devices. So to then get access to iOS, which is like all the remaining devices, would be absolutely massive, particularly given that most of these AI models get better the more data they can be fed. The fact that Google Gemini will be receiving this data on device, so potentially learning about you and your usage habits and potentially doing tasks for you in different apps and things like this, obviously means that the personalization capabilities of Gemini might increase, which is going to make the product better, which is inevitably going to lead to more Google search traffic. Is there anything it can't answer? Or if you ask for a recommendation for a business or a recommendation of the next EV that you should buy, then we expect that Gemini would then send you off to Google search results. So I think over the last year, people have been worried about Google losing market share to ChatGPT. And I think Google has been worried about that as well. But this would be a big call, I think, and a big maybe change in direction in that dynamic, and maybe reestablish Google as their core destination or a big core destination for the next generation of search. And it also means that you know, there are some implications for advertising here as well. Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, has quite publicly been against ads. He doesn't like ads. He doesn't want ChatGPT to be ad-driven, and thinks that ads are a sort of a fault of the current version of the internet. Whereas obviously Google is very ad-driven, and I think any Gemini-based product would have opportunity for advertisers to reach customers, because when it couldn't give you the answer, it would kick you back to Google search. So I think for marketers, this is massive. It means that everything that we're doing to optimize for Google, all the information that we're feeding Google, is going to stand us in good stead. because it'll help us to rank on those Gemini type searches. Of course, we're going to need to keep on our toes. We're going to need to optimize for the next version of Gemini and all these different AI searches that Google comes out with, like we have done for SGE. And if you haven't followed Exposure Ninja's work in SGE, then we've got some webinars on how to rank for that. But I think, yeah, I think this is huge because it's like it implies that Google might be winning more in the next generation of the internet than maybe some of us had assumed. What do we think?
Lauren, I'd love to know how you're considering the impact to Gemini and SEO in the work that you do.
To be honest, it's very much a watch and learn. I think so I'm going to Brighton SEO conference in April, so I'm really excited to kind of see what comes up there and everyone's thoughts on that. But honestly, I've always will have the same approach to what I have, which is people first, SEO second, naughty. But I think that is the way that Google wants to go eventually anyway. And whether it's, and things like user generated, there's, I've slowly put some like reviews that have been made by real people in that are video and lots of different things like that. But I think that's the most we can do until we know more about it. But the AI excites me. I love the thought of AI. ChatGPT, I'm like obsessed with. Mainly for making like fun bedtime stories, to be honest, but more than work. I'm really excited by it and I'm excited to see what comes out of it.
Interesting. I wonder, do you find yourself using AI like ChatGPT, as you say, more on the phone than you would have done before on desktop?
Do you know what? I don't use it on my phone. I'm mainly desktop for ChatGPT. I think it's easier to read. It probably is like a, and I don't use it that much. I probably could use it more because there is so much capability there. But no, it's definitely more desktop than mobile.
I'd love to know, Jess or Tim, do either of you use the mobile versions of, like, I know, Jess, you prefer Claude to ChatGPT, or do you use any mobile AI apps at all?
I have done in the past, but the conversation about mobile has really got me wondering if voice search is finally going to have its day. Because I know, you know, everybody's been talking about voice search for so long, and it's one of these things that kind of gets pointed out, and it's a bit of a laughing stock, I guess, in the SEO community of being like, voice search never going to happen, like you're never going to make it happen. But potentially combining AI and this kind of voice search stuff, you might start to see people using them more often. Like, I would be interested to know how people use things like Siri, because in my life, it seems to be just to be used for setting timers and asking about the weather. And it most of the time, it does not set my timers and it tells me the wrong weather. So I do wonder if the use case for it is going to change. And I'm just really, really intrigued by that. And whether we're just going to need to optimize for AI, or if we are going to start having to think about voice search and the way that people will ask questions out loud. But then again, this is a whole another thing. The way that me and my partner both talk to the Siri is very different. So I don't know if people are just going to go, weather, Siri, weather, you know, or if people are like me are going to go, hi, Siri, I'm going out and I would like to know, you know, and all that fluff. That gets me constantly roasted by everyone, but I don't mind. I like being nice to the AI. It's nice. It makes me feel nice. So it's just for me. but yeah, I'm really curious about how maybe people are going to have to think about that aspect as well. And are our customers the kind of people who are going to ask a long question and are going to be more fluffy with their questions? Or are they going to be asking really succinct keywords and basically Google searching out loud as opposed to asking a question to another person? It's just, yeah, that was kind of a blah of thoughts, but hopefully somebody got something out of that.
I love it. I use ChatGPT only in voice mode on my phone and find it really useful for basically what you're saying, Jess, those super long tail queries, because you don't have to translate your query into search Google language, Boolean. You don't have to, you know, you can say whatever you want. So like if there's black bits on this plant, I'll be like, well, what are the black bits on my plant? It's kind of near a window. It's getting a bit of light. It's got long spiky leaves. I sort of water it a little bit, but you can just go on and on and on. And actually the more detail you give the question, the better you get the answer. Whereas on Google, it's kind of the opposite. So I think there's loads of potential there. And it's like you said, Jess, it'd be really interesting to see how people's usage of Siri changes if they can give massively detailed questions and get massively detailed answers. And I suspect that what will end up happening is a bit like what we see with Bing Chat, where Gemini is then running background web searches to surface information or web results that we need so that it can inject those into the answer when relevant. So we'll have to optimize for whatever the criteria are that that web search is using if we're going to get our brands found. But this is, it's just such a wild time, isn't it? It's so unknown. None of us know what this is going to look like in a year, let alone five. Great. Love it.
I'm curious to know if any of you have seen any kind of change in search behavior from yourself or maybe the people around you or the people you're trying to market to for your content, perhaps Lauren. Have you seen any change in the kind of queries that people are putting in or you're finding in Search Console via Google? Or
to be honest, at the minute, they're quite short. So like I'd say we get lots of more... like they wouldn't be questions. They are literally just like three words. So like, for example, if they want to know how to charge a public EV charging station, it's EV charging station. Like they don't say, how do I use it? So obviously I have to play to that and know that that's what they're asking. But I think, like you say, if things like that change, you will ask full questions because you don't go up to people and say EV charging station and expect them to know what you mean. I think I'm always of the idea that you will write to how you talk. So I always write how I talk. It's probably sometimes a little bit dangerous. And we like to waffle. But I think that will actually probably be a benefit because I think people are going to ask questions how they talk eventually, and we're going to be able to answer them how we talk. So I'll stay down that route for the moment and we'll see what happens. But yeah, at the minute, we're still at three-word questions rather than long-tail questions, especially in our world anyway. But they wouldn't type electric vehicle. It's far too much effort with your fingers, isn't it? Like, we're all a bit lazy. How many people voice note over texting now? So there's hope for voice search, I guess. I'd use it if it was really good.
So. Yeah.
One of the first things I realized when I saw ChatGPT was that, you know, when I was younger, not so much now, I was a big like Trekkie nerd and like, you know, love that kind of stuff. And I was like, talking to the computer to get like all these calculations, that's amazing. And when ChatGPT came out, I initially thought like that is the direction it's going. I thought the voice search, as Jess mentioned earlier, didn't turn out exactly how we predicted. And we all kind of like talked it up at the time because we saw like it could really be something. I genuinely think that's where we're heading to now. It won't be much longer. Okay, we did have a very fast acceleration of like developments and then it kind of plateaued. I don't imagine it'll be too long before it'll be like another fast acceleration where like that talkative, responsive, natural language search has just become standard in our Search Console, you know, or, you know, your keyword tracker, whichever one you use, will just be filled full of, you know, 5, 6, 7 words eventually. I'd actually like to know a little bit more about your story now, Lauren, if you wouldn't mind.
What do you want to know? Oh, as in, like,
what is it?
I'm like, what? It feels like a Monday today. So basically, I've been looking into tone of voice recently a lot. So I've noticed a massive growing trend in how people talk. So way back when, I reckon before Audi came on the mark, it was probably limited to the amount of marketing and branding that you'd see that's quite not very chatty, quite jargon based, or just there were strict rules in grammar, in wording, what you could say and what you couldn't say. And coming from a medical background, like is my first job, it was very much like you can only say may and can, you have to buffer yourself, you can't be too cheeky. Whereas a lot of brands are coming out there and becoming a lot cheekier, and I'm here for it, like completely here for it. Everyone will know about that Audi, like Audi's marketing. Everyone follows Audi's marketing, like it's just a given. I live for their posts, especially if there's reality TV. I don't pay attention to reality TV, but I love hearing how Audi are going to relate that to their life. Like it's just absolutely brilliant, and I live for the lawsuits. I never thought I would. I think it's brilliant, like just them going against each other. And then Monzo, I don't know if many people follow Monzo, but they have changed the world in using emojis. Like they're a banking app that use emojis, which is I don't know, if you'd said that 5 years ago, I don't think that you would ever think there would be a bank, a banking app that uses emojis. For my birthday last week, and every time I spent something, it came up with a birthday emoji next to the payment. Brilliant. Like St. Patrick's Day, lucky clover. Like I love little things like that. So so there's just like been a massive trend. This I spoke about recently, plant-based marketing. I don't know if you know much of it. My favorite story about them is they have meatball packaging, and when you take the meatballs out, or not meatballs, they're pretend meatballs obviously, but you take them out and it says like, my name is so-and-so, please help me, I'm trapped. So they've done like really, really go out there marketing to make people talk about them. There was like a Twitter X thing back when it was Twitter, where someone had posted, I think Sainsbury's got bored, and what had happened is the people that had done the marketing for this, on the back of packaging, write all the stuff, and then they just put type loads of letters, and it looked like they'd got bored. And then at the end, it says, "We got bored, couldn't make the word count," and then that represented on every single supplier's website. And it was just, it's just stuff like that. I love cheeky stuff that goes out there and we get, like, it gets talked about. And there's been a growing trend in it, and I'm here for it.
My question to you, though, is it getting talked about by the right people? So are the consumers of those brands going around and talking about them and saying, look, you'll never guess what my bank app is doing, it's sending me emojis and stuff? Or do you think it's the marketers that are doing a lot of talking about it between themselves?
I think it's a mix of two. So before I was in marketing was when I noticed this. Like, that was, I think that was brilliant. And I think they aimed it at the right people. So this is a vegan brand. And I think the vegan trend tends to be in, like, probably now early 20s to 30s, maybe a bit more at the minute. And I think that's exactly who they were aiming at. My mum and dad wouldn't have found that funny. But they're not the target market because they also don't believe in veganism. So, like, there was a strong, that was really clever play. And I could see that more as a marketer. But at the time, I just thought it was brilliant. And it made me recognize their brand. And I did, like, I do still to this day eat some of their food. And I'm not a vegan, but I like it. So I think sometimes, I think with other Audi again, my mum actually does love, it took her a while, but like, she loves the Audi marketing and she now shops at Audi. And I think they noticed a ridiculous amount in growth in people shopping there once they started campaigns like that. So they definitely are. I think it depends. It wouldn't work for everyone. It depends on your target market and who you're speaking to. You couldn't do it for cod liver oil. And I think we can take that how we want to take that. But I don't think it would, that's not the right target market. Do you get what I mean? Like, it's not, you got to think about your branding and what's going to work with cheeky tone and what's not.
You wouldn't be like a cheeky funeral home, would you?
There you go. That's a better one than cod liver oil. Thank you.
Having said that, though, Jess, there is that insurance company that you told me about, the life insurance company, which, like, they celebrate your
death. Dead Happy. Yeah, they are quite interesting, and they are, like, they have had their controversial moments, but that tends to come with any company that does quirky marketing, because I think sometimes you do have to push it a little bit too far before reeling it back in. But they, you know, they do, you make a death wish, and basically you can choose whether you want, it's sort of to do with your funeral and stuff, but it makes it a little bit more fun. And it will be to do with, like, do you want people to have a big party after you die? Do you want all your money to go to a certain place? Basically, they found that a lot of people, especially younger people, were not buying life insurance because it was a pain to get it done. And it felt really fusty and really annoying and just difficult. And so they wanted to make it fun, essentially. And I feel like they've done a pretty good job of that. Like, I feel like their website's really, really eye-catching. And, like, you know, they've done collaborations with, like, new games being released. I think they did one with Dead Island, which is quite funny, which is, like, zombie-themed. So they've kind of figured out who their audience is and then been like, well, they'll probably be interested in Dead Island as well, and then combine the marketing together. So I do think, yeah, but like I said, they've definitely done stuff that goes a bit far. And I know, for instance, like, me and my partner really like Oatly, but he hates all the stuff they write on their cartons. He's like, why? I just want to drink my milk. I just don't care. Whereas for me, I'm like, I don't care in the other way. Like, I'm like, I don't really care what they write on my bottle. If it tastes nice, it tastes nice. As long as they're not, like, I don't know, writing offensive stuff on there, you know. I know as well, Lush had a controversy because on their shower gel, it says like directions for use is like, if you don't know how to use it, ask somebody to show you how to use it in the shower or something. And some person got upset because they'd brought it for their kid and felt that it was really inappropriate and all this stuff. And so I suppose, yeah, it's very, but also you have to take the losses too, I think. For instance, yeah. If people kick off about your thing, but they're not people that you're trying to target with that thing, does it matter? You know, it's, yeah, very interesting. I love this conversation, Lauren. I'm so glad you brought it up because it's such a...
It's such a good one. Surreal. I mentioned this to Jesse the week, actually. Surreal, they're like a cereal brand. On the back of that, they've got a picture of a missing cat. It says missing cat. And then underneath it says, the cat's not really missing. We just wanted to get your attention. And like, not for everyone, but I laughed out loud. Like, I thought that was brilliant. And the cereal's actually not that bad. But again, their branding and marketing, like if you've ever been to like London and the tube station, they did like some really big campaigns and it was everywhere and they got a lot of influencers involved. And it was a really, really good, like lots of good campaigns. But again, they were like, they're on the cheeky side, but it's because they're going for that specific target market. It doesn't work for everyone, but it's obviously working for the companies that it does. Like it like works for us. I love writing cheeky. Maybe sometimes I take it a bit too far. Do have to sometimes message my manager, like, can I say this? I think I used dosh the other day in a blog. And I was like, can I get away with dosh? Like, is that too far? Like, is that too informal?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I did get away with it. There's a few that probably pushed the boat just that little bit too far to test, which is long, long way away from medical writing because you can't really joke about thyroid conditions. So I thoroughly... Like I said, it depends on your target market, doesn't it? Like, you can't, it doesn't work for everything. And I've seen both ends of it. We found ways of doing it. I think those TikTok questions, you know, have you seen the question and answers where they go on the street? There's been a lot of political ones recently, which have made me laugh, but I won't bring up politics here. They like will stand on the, like in London or Manchester, and they'll ask specific questions and get people to answer. I love them. They're brilliant. Like, again, it's a new way of finding questions, answers and tones of voices again in ways that you wouldn't usually be able to. Like, we did it at the blood testing company and it meant that we could kind of get that target market in that area. And then on Facebook, for example, we wouldn't post stuff like that. We'd post different things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, love a bit of tone of voice, me.
Tim, I'm actually really keen to get your thoughts on this because I know you've often looked at brands and like analyzed their tone of voice and, you know, especially with the medical stuff for some of our previous clients. And actually, if you want to become a client of Exposure Ninja, the first point of that is going to exposureninja.com/review. You can request a free website marketing review where we'll analyze the opportunities for your website and highlight exactly what you can do to get some better results by the end of today. That's exposureninja.com/review. Tim, I did it roughly in there somewhere.
Question. Smooth. So, mid question CTO. Love it.
Tell us a little bit more about your observations about branding, tone of voice.
Well, it seems to me like a no-brainer if that's your target audience. Like Lauren said, if that's your audience and they're going to respond well to it, it seems like a no-brainer because it doesn't really cost any more. Like you're printing that meatball packet anyway. It doesn't cost you any more to put a little message underneath the meatballs, which gets a response from people. So I love that. And the fact that, you know, the first job of copy is to get read. And clearly this new sort of generation of copywriters, they're getting their content read and shared and people are posting it and sending it to each other, which is great because I think so much web copy in particular, and we as SEOs are probably guilty of influencing this, is so sort of generic and derivative and written for search engines that it's just boring. It's just boilerplate. You just look at a page of text and think, I can't be bothered to read that. Whereas if you know that it's quirky fun, there's like cartoons, there's little pictures in it, I think that's a great way to stand out, particularly if you're selling something boring. I think there's also a bit of implied transparency as well about it. So if you're selling insurance and you're being jokey and playful, you seem less like a scam, to be honest. I don't know how else to say it, because you're building a personality around the brand that people can connect with and people like and trust. You know, if someone comes up to you in the street and they've got a suit and tie on and they're very rigid and they put the microphone in your face and ask you a question, you're probably a bit more closed off. Whereas if they look like you and they sound like you and they put the microphone in your face, you're probably a bit more open. So I love that people are tapping into that. I guess I wonder how long this is going to be a differentiator for, and if we'll see more and more brands adopting this style, at which point you might get brands sort of fighting to become the most outrageous. I wonder how long it is until we see someone that is just willingly, openly offensive just for the sake of getting attention. Could be kind of interesting. Maybe it's the cod liver oil tablet brand of the future. But until that point, I crack on. Love it. Personality never hurt anyone.
One brand that has a lot of personality, or at least has done for like 20 years now, is the Innocent Smoothie brand. And they've really kind of probably been a great example for to the marketing industry, but to, you know, businesses generally, on how to kind of pull personality into your brand. I wonder if they have kind of reached a shelf life, like their drinks, on their personality, and whether they need to divert into doing something. Could you imagine them starting to do some like really risky stuff? Maybe. But I think it's more likely they're going to dive into, let's talk more about brand purpose. And, you know, we want to, you know, showcase that we're a B Corp and all those various other things, and lean, you know, pull a little bit back on the over the obvious personality stuff. I'm not sure. It'd be worth doing a deep dive on them, I would think. Jess, your headline was TikTok US ban ? Tell
it
us.
It was. So there's been, I mean, this conversation has come up so many times in the past couple of years. It seems like the US is constantly trying to ban TikTok, but I don't know, this time it feels a little bit more serious for some reason. It feels like something's a little bit different. But basically, the House of Representatives have passed a bill that would give ByteDance, which is the company that owns TikTok, 6 months to essentially either just be like, oh, we're not going to be in America anymore, or to sell TikTok to an American company, which is just like, they're like being like, do you want to do this rubbish thing or do you want to do this rubbish thing? It's just ridiculous. Or it's like they've given them, they just want them to leave. I just don't think they want the app at all, because they're giving them this ridiculous ultimatum that's an alternative. And if they don't do that, then app stores will be banned from making the app available in the USA. So it'll actually come down to like Apple and Google Play Store to kind of enforce this. People who already have it, it won't be illegal for them to use, but they just won't be able to download from app stores, which creates a whole other problem of like, if there's some influencer or a business that's using TikTok as like their main place of like main source of income, then, and their phone resets, that's it, it's gone. They don't even have the chance to be like, bye everyone. So it still needs to go through the Senate and be signed into law by Biden, but he's actually said that he would sign it. And Trump has also said the same in the past, and he didn't get it signed, because I think there's a big argument as to whether it goes against free speech. And also there's a lot of young people who really love the app and use it a lot. And there's like a significant amount of people in the USA who use TikTok. Like, it's not a small amount of people. Most of the content that I get on there as an English speaker is from the US. But the US government just seem convinced that it's the Chinese government is potentially controlling TikTok or being able to control things that are happening on it. And it's such a popular platform, and they're concerned, I suppose, about elections or things like that. But really, what does this mean for marketers? And the main thing that's almost irrelevant to TikTok, but it's a good place to talk about it, is all about not relying too heavily on one platform. Because we've seen, you know, I know, Tim, back in when you just sort of first started with EN, you, well, Exposure Ninja, if we want to full name her, you had a situation where you're working with a company who they relied very heavily on a certain type of search. And then there was a big update. I cannot remember which update it was, maybe Penguin. And they were totally just dragged under. Like, it was quite difficult for them to be able to kind of get that traffic again. The same thing kind of happens as well when you have like Instagram and Facebook outages, well, Meta outages. If you're relying on WhatsApp, Instagram and Facebook to do your marketing, and those go down, you're in trouble. It's the same with Twitter/X. You know, the climate on there has changed a lot, and there's a lot of companies who have left because they don't feel happy with that. If they were getting most of their traffic there, there's, you know, it's, people are going to be frustrated with that. So yeah, it's the most important thing really is to just think about diversifying your marketing. And as well, there are, especially with social media apps, they're all trying to be each other. So if you are a person who uses, and you're a US business and you are using TikTok, think about places like YouTube Shorts and Instagram. Yes, it's a little bit different and you might find a different audience there. But also if you communicate with your audience on TikTok and just say, not necessarily like we're leaving, come follow us, but if you can maybe give them some exclusive content over on those platforms for a while and just sort of like ease them over, then you might be able to get somewhere with that.
I think it's really difficult when you're getting a lot of your traffic or you're getting a lot of traction to even justify diversifying. We've seen it at various points in our business, but also our clients, like when you're absolutely killing it in search or YouTube or TikTok or whatever, and you can put in a small amount of effort in that platform and get massive results. We're basically saying you need to put in a huge amount of effort somewhere else and get initially almost no results. And you need to do that consistently. It's really difficult to justify doing that when you're getting so much traction on one platform. But I guess over the last year or two, we've seen massive changes at Twitter. We've seen massive changes at Google. And potentially this year, we've seen the first hints of Google losing its dominance in search, which was just inconceivable. Like Jess mentioned, we've had Panda and Penguin. We've seen sites being hit with helpful content update. You know, none of these platforms will live forever. They will all die at some point. And all the businesses that are completely reliant on them will also really struggle. So we do have to diversify, even when it's painful, especially when it's painful to do so, because you don't want to wait too long. You don't want to wait until you're forced to do it. Whether TikTok actually gets banned or not, I don't know. It's a really interesting thing. I think the Chinese government has actually said that they're not allowed to divest it, or that ByteDance isn't allowed to divest it. So that's sort of, they're playing a game of chicken, these two governments. It remains to be seen. But yeah, diversify, peeps.
Yeah, even though TikTok's topic of conversation here, think back to Vine. Like, there was creators who were so, so popular on Vine. And then one day Vine was like, sorry, shutting down. See ya, and just sort of kick them all out the back door. And some of them found success on YouTube, sure, but a lot of them probably didn't. And so, yeah, it's not just, even if you're like, well, I don't use TikTok, so this doesn't apply to me, it could be any of the platforms that you use. Yeah. So look out, watch your backs.
Aren't they looking at doing a snaps, like a TikTok doing, it's like TikTok snaps or something. Aren't they launching one of those? Mm-hmm. Does that like sit within TikTok as well, or do you think they're doing that so they can diversify?
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think because it's ByteDance that the US government doesn't like, because they're so massive and they own a few different apps within that kind of space. So I think that's what, like, that's who the US government is getting sweaty about, basically.
Yeah, I think I did see in the news just this week about there was some TikTok photos app hidden within the code of the existing like TikTok app. And there's like even a logo that was found and stuff. It's an interesting one. I do wonder whether maybe they're trying to creep into Instagram. Instagram and TikTok are just going to be exactly the same as each other. I just don't see that. It frustrates me. I just buy TikTok and just get it all over and done with, and all of us be able to move on with our marketing lives. Kind of frustrating.
But do you remember you used to talk about buying TikTok. Do you remember who was going to buy TikTok last time this all kicked off? Walmart. Yeah.
All right then.
Yeah, so, I mean, because you've also got to think about competition, right? I can see how it would make sense for Walmart, but I could also see the competition authority saying, well, you know, Meta can't buy TikTok because then you've got X percent of the short-form video market.
That's a really fair point. So with TikTok doing massive e-commerce numbers in Asia, it makes a lot of sense. Like, I imagine they have a lot of partnerships with a lot of the e-commerce stores around there and AliExpress and all that kind of stuff. It makes a lot of sense when TikTok are pushing towards, you know, e-com being a bigger part of it, TikTok Shop and everything, that you would expect that maybe the people that have one of the biggest and most organized distribution logistics networks in the US wouldn't mind having a piece of that pie. Like, fair play. That's actually not a bad idea whatsoever. Interesting. Lauren, I wonder how you think about this from like an SEO and content perspective. Do you have any thoughts on it at all?
For TikTok? Not... I think it's hard because I think, so it depends on which way Google AI goes and stuff, I think, because there's been such abuse with like perspectives and stuff, like pushing these kind of things into search results, which I've been very, very wary of. So again, it could muck that up a little bit. It would mean that like whatever we post on TikTok that we kind of want to push into that perspectives area would have to change to something else like YouTube or Instagram, like those kind of things. So I see it from that perspective. I love TikTok though. Like, as in, I'm a nightmare. I'll review, if I want to buy a pair of shoes, I'll go on TikTok and search those pair of shoes and see them on somebody else in real life. So it shows that user generated content is actually something massive. So I think it could really affect, depending on how well perspectives goes and how much more of a push out that they do with that. Other than that, I don't really have a lot to do with TikTok, to be honest, in a work environment. That's more social media driven. It crosses sometimes when it's to do with console, like Google and stuff, but bar that, not a lot to do with it, to be honest.
I did spot the other day the perspectives maybe having its name changed to forums, and that they're having like a brand new carousel just for social media content. So your point about TikTok and UGC, like user generated content, I think is really important, because when you're trying to, you know, put together your content of, okay, for you and, you know, EVs, how does EV perspectives or reviews of EVs on YouTube or elsewhere, how does that appear within the search results? It's going to be really important. So, you know, people might, it's not going to be called perspectives anymore, it's going to be called forums, but they're still going to see these snippets of like, okay, oh, Car Wow was talked about this car, and there's a really interesting point about X and whatever. Okay, I want to learn more about the mileage, and then that video pops up. That's a huge SEO opportunity, whether it's indirect or not. Like, you can go and talk with that YouTube channel and say like, okay, well, can you, maybe not with my team, but I can approach the video half of the marketing team and be like, hey, partnership peeps, can you just like work with like, oh, let's do something over there, because that's going to impact my work and we're going to get like a really big benefit from it. It's like, there's an opportunity. I do see like some work and opportunities there, whether it's like direct or indirect for SEO or not. That'd be really interesting to see if they do push that out globally as well. Okay, we're now going to decide which story you're going to turn into tasks. That's a tricky one this week, mainly because I really find that the Gemini within Apple devices really important. I feel like we talk about AI plenty. I think I'm going to pick the growing trend in a more relaxed TOV, because it's not something that we've covered recently, and I don't want to talk about TikTok right now. I'd rather turn the voice stuff into tasks. So, Jess, I'm going to start with you. What tasks can marketing managers take away from this story about TOV?
I would definitely say review your tone of voice to start, because it might be one of those things that hasn't been touched for a long time and that maybe was an afterthought, right? Where you've just been like, oh, let's just talk like this and just keep it easy, keep it simple. And there could actually be some opportunities there for you, whether you speak to your sales team or your customer service team and find out the kind of ways that customers chat when they come and chat to the sales team. Are they really like, I don't know, stiff about it and really using a lot of technical terminology or being, you know, quite serious? Or are they saying things like Lauren said, are they saying dosh? Are they being more chill? Are they sort of using these more calm words? And another thing as well is, if you're still unsure, you can always look to your founder. Like, we tend to write like Tim at Exposure Ninja because that just kind of works. And, you know, we kind of want to embody that kind of, Tim's a little cheeky, I think, and a little bit edgy at times. So we kind of embody that a little bit with that kind of professional spin. So that's another place that you can look. And also look to competitors. Maybe you don't want to do the same thing as them, but that could give you some insight, especially if they're like huge multinationals. You know, you could look at them and think, they do this, maybe I could do that. But then also don't fall into the trap of thinking that's what you should do, because there's certain companies, like for instance BrewDog, who maybe went from being like super super relaxed to now being a bit more corporate. So just keep an eye out for that. Look to loads of places, look everywhere for inspiration. That's what I'm saying, I think.
Love it. Tim, what tasks can business owners take from Lauren's story?
I think it's, if you've got great marketers like Lauren and your team, it's going to be really difficult, I think, to let go of some of these tone of voice things, because you might think, oh, we need to be professional, or, you know, we need to talk in a certain way. And, you know, Lauren and the cool kids and the people who actually know what's going on the street, like, that they're probably going to be right. If they're well connected to your target audience, they're going to be right about this. So I think it's just be willing to let go a little bit. There's nothing more frustrating when we're working with a client, particularly if the founder gets involved, or, you know, the owner gets involved and sort of veto things that they don't really understand, and they're doing it from a place of fear, not from a place of, you know, well-informed. I've been studying what's going on, I've been looking at the trends here, I've been talking to our customers all day long and I know how they talk. They're just like, no, we can't do that. It's so frustrating and it's a real impediment. So I feel like this is a common thread about my advice to business owners from our marketing stories, but just be okay to let go a little and trust the marketing team to do what they do well. Lauren, I don't know, do you have to fight for this in Octopus, or maybe I shouldn't specifically talk about Octopus.
No.
Have you had to fight for this in your career, or have you just happened to find companies that are happy to embrace this?
I have had to a little bit. Not Octopus, no. Like, they are actually... way too, they've probably taught me something. I've never heard, like, grown men use the word slay before until I worked there. So, do you know what I mean? Like, right. I've never known anything like it, and it's brilliant. And I can't wait for it to become a thing that people put in blogs. Like, I'm excited for that day. But I have had to fight for it before, because I think a lot of people, they're like, oh, but that's not how we do things. But I'm pretty sure it's the way that words change. Like, email at one point always had a hyphen in it. Do you know, like, it doesn't now. No one ever uses the word email with a hyphen in it anymore. But I'm sure things like that would have been really fought, like, you'd really have to fight. Using and at the beginning of a sentence, like, it was hammered into me at school. You can't use and, like, at the beginning of a sentence. It doesn't work like that. Like, you can't do that. Now all I do is full stop and. Like, I'm a nightmare. All of them. And I think it's things like that change, but they'll always be fought for. And I think it's just like it's a rite of passage, isn't it, to fight for those tone of voices and those changes, as it is with anything, do you know, like any change in the world kind of thing. I think there's just lots of gaps at the minute now. I think there's lots of different generations with such huge advances, that I think there's always going to be that struggle, because there's been so much change in such a short amount of time. But in short,
I think it's really... Sorry to cut you off. I think it's really important to recognize that, and that you are getting companies like Dead Happy. They're essentially offering a commoditized product, but the only way that they're standing out is they're just connecting with the audience better than the incumbents. Like, it's tone of voice as a USP. And that's pretty much it. Like, yeah, of course, I'm sure they've got some, you know, they've got some things in their benefits bar, which are the logical reasons why they're different. But mainly they're standing out because they sound different. The same with Surreal, the cereal company, right? It's a cereal. You can buy it in a subscription. If you work out the price per gram, it's incredibly expensive. But this is essentially tone of voice, right? It's buying a friendly cereal rather than buying a faceless cereal. And I think it's recognizing that whilst traditional companies don't adopt this practice, there will be new companies that take market share just by doing this. I mean, Octopus, right? You're a huge company across loads of different areas, but one of the main strengths I see in Octopus is the branding and the tone of voice and just how cool it is, and like user interface and how easy the website is to use. Like, that's huge, because those things are essentially, I mean, they're a lot of work, but they're free. Just have a good website and look really cool and talk really cool. Like, none of those things actually cost vast amounts of money. And you can disrupt huge energy companies with that. That's amazing. What a time to be alive. Marketers win. Finally.
Definitely. I think it's just making it, like, simple. That's, at the end of the day, that's what it is, isn't it? People don't want to make it hard for people. And I think that's, like, one of the number one rules is just make it simple. Make it easy to understand. That's it. It goes a long way.
Yeah, 100%. Well, thank you both, and thank you all for turning those stories into tasks. I really appreciate that. Lauren, we're going to hop into a quick five questions, if you don't mind.
Yes, go for it.
Prepare yourself. Okay. They're very intense. That's our experience last week. Lauren, if you had just 1 hour to improve your marketing, what would you work on?
culling all unnecessary content. It's genuinely like one of my favorite things to do, and an hour of doing that would do you no end of good. Google will appreciate it.
Won't we all?
Yeah, and people.
What would you do with an infinite marketing budget?
This is a really hard one. To be honest, I love really big in-person campaigns, like anything where people dress silly or like really out there. Like Hertility did an amazing one. They wore boards in the London Underground. Like, I love that. I'd do something massive like that, but like maybe like a flash dance all over the country or something. I don't know, all as octopuses or something. I don't know, octopi? I don't know the plural.
That's a great idea.
Love that one. How cool would that be? Like just Connie the Octopus just flash dancing all over the country in different cities.
Mate, you got an infinite budget. Make it global. Every city around the world. Yeah.
Imagine all the news stations. Yeah, I do something really silly like that, just out there.
Amazing. Love it. Which marketing skill would you recommend that the 18-year-old Lauren work on and why?
Probably controversial. Probably coding. I know it's not necessarily marketing, necessarily, technically, but it is. And I think it becomes so handy in SEO or like websites. And I think having that minor understanding can be so helpful in so many areas of marketing. So probably coding, if that classes.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. Coding's super important. So yeah, give you a helping hand, especially with SEO.
Yeah.
What are you most excited about in marketing right now?
Probably AI. I'm not scared of it. I'm really excited about it. I think it's so cool. And I know it's probably a lot of people's answers at the minute. But AI like really, really excites me. All the changes, I'm excited to see where it goes.
Me too. Who do you think we should invite to be our next podcast guest?
It's really hard. To be fair, anyone that is speaking at Brighton SEO conference, like any one of those people, anyone like that. I think everyone's got such good, like different insights in so many different areas that any of them would be pretty cool to listen to.
Great shout. I think we'd all agree that going to Brighton SEO is something that every SEO or somebody who has an interest in SEO should do in their lifetime.
It's my first ever one, so I'll let you know what I think.
You're going to love it. They're fantastic. They're very good conferences. Well, awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us. I really appreciated and enjoyed your time on this week's podcast. It was. I hope you enjoyed it too.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Anytime.
Well, thank you all for listening to this week's episode of The Dojo. If you want to listen to more, you can go to exposeninja.com/podcast and you'll be able to find all 300 plus episodes of the main podcast with Tim, Cameron Kitchen, and the rest of us as well. So that's exposeninja.com/podcast. I'll see you all next week. Bye.